ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Hey guys, it's Pablo. That sound you're hearing in the background of my voice should signal that we are doing a very different episode of ESPN Daily, because I just walked through a very long corridor at a convention center in Boston. There were a lot of dudes, some women, a lot of dudes milling around wearing suits, holding resumes, very intense and ambitious. And like along one of these walls in this hallway, it's kind of like a corporate science fair almost. There are headlines on these posters, and the headlines say stuff like a Markov approach to untangling intention versus execution in tennis. Another one I'm looking at, a game theoretic approach to the football endgame. When should the 2-minute drill begin? And so obviously the question would be like, where the hell am I? What is this place? And this is, of course, the preeminent den of sports nerdery in America, the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. You may have heard of it, but maybe you haven't. And if you really want an explanation as to what is going on here, we found the guy who you should ask. So Daryl Morey, president of basketball operations of the Philadelphia 76ers. For the non-nerds out there, Daryl, what is this event?
I think it's like Gretzky said, we're passing the puck to where it's going. So we're trying to stay 3 to 5 years ahead of all the trends in sports, whether that be analytics or VR or NFTs or drone racing, whatever it might be.
Why did you create this event in the first place?
The sports nerds were wandering aimlessly through the desert until they found the oasis of our conference.
I've always thought of you as a Moses figure, yeah.
I don't know about that. So you really threw me off there.
Daryl, yesterday you were wearing a James Harden cartoon t-shirt. What are you wearing today for the listening audience?
Today I have a Bored Ape, and yesterday I had the James Harden side-eye shirt.
Yeah, like the Bored Ape, you have like a Caesar kind of get-up. It's all very on the nose, Daryl.
I try to be on brand.
Have you been fined yet for anything you've said at Sloan?
No comment.
So yes, it is clear that Daryl invented Sloan, but it is also clear that Sloan is changing sports itself as it mushrooms into something bigger and bigger with what feels like a zillion panel discussions, one of which, moderated by yours truly, happens to be today's episode. So today, live at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, we get a rare, candid look at the existential crisis that pretty much every major American sport is now reckoning with behind the scenes. That with stars chasing rings in the playoffs and with gas bags like me obsessing over trophies, the regular season, most of the sports calendar itself, is suffering. And fixing it requires a re-examination of some of our most sacred traditions. I'm Pablo Torre. It is Monday, March 7th. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Yeah. So as I said at the top, today's episode is different. It's a talk from this weekend at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. And it was a talk with three panelists from three different sports who we are very glad to have on our show. We have Evan Wash, the NBA's Executive Vice President of Basketball Strategy and Operations. We have Brad Purcell, the Senior Vice President of Game Schedule Management at Major League Soccer. And we have Sam Schwartzman, the former Director of Football Operations, Innovation and Strategy at the XFL. And so, yeah, here's the panel. Thank you for coming to a very special episode of ESPN Daily. We don't ever have a live studio audience, but that's how I think of you guys. So if you want to recreate the laugh track of like a home improvement, maybe, I'd appreciate that for the people at home. The title of the panel, to be very clear, it's up on these screens, Maximizing Competitive Meaning. And so I want to start by just establishing how we got to the point where the playoffs went from a thing we respect to a thing we love to a thing we almost fetishize now to the expense of many other things. And Evan, through your lens at the NBA, how has that trajectory looked to you? How did we get to the point where actually the process, tanking, that is anti-competitive in one sense, but it's also the evidence that people will almost gnaw off a leg to win a ring?
Yeah, I think you take a step back and every sport is structured differently in the way they drive competitive incentives. So European soccer doesn't have playoffs for the most part. US leagues mostly have playoffs. And so you look at how those incentives differ and how they grow over time and the so-called obsession with the ring, it doesn't have to take away from the rest of the competition. And I think as teams, players, fans have become obsessive with that chase, what you're talking about is really long-term versus short-term competition. Obviously, a team that is so-called tanking is pursuing championships in the long term. They're not just losing for the sake of losing. So yeah, you could say they're competing in their own way, but what we want to produce is a product where every single night when I turn on a game, I know that those two teams are competing at their best that night, because that's the core of our entertainment product. And so I think it's all about how do you not break that cycle, but how do you build around a playoffs and a championship in a way that creates that competitive drive night after night?
Yeah, because there is this tension, right, between sports as entertainment product, the TV show, the thing you might tune in to watch, I don't know, on game 33 of the NBA regular season,
yeah,
versus what the NBA tends to be, which is the thing that is so good at producing the best team as your champion.
Right. We have 30 teams, right? The cliche of it's hard to win in our league, right? We don't want 29 of our 30 markets to feel disappointed at the end of a season. That's not a good product where whatever percent that is, someone helped, 96% of your fans are unhappy every year. And so there have to be other things to win and to feel joy about when watching the product through the year.
So Brad, at Major League Soccer, you know, there's this fascinating experiment that you guys ran when MLS was built and of course, overseas, world football, as it were, like, that's not a thing that fetishizes playoffs. That's a sport, that's a league, in the EPL at least, where, you know, the best record is who gets to be the best team.
Sure.
But Major League Soccer isn't structured that way. There is a playoff. Take me through why it is that ended up being that way.
Yeah, I think Evan said it in some of his earlier comments. That's the North American mindset. And that's how the sport culture is in North America. Liga MX, the Mexican league, has a playoff system. So while soccer is globally a very traditional sport, and in most leagues, Europe in particular, does not have a playoff system, the best team at the end of the regular season is the champion. In North America, and we feel that it was important to stay aligned with the other leagues and have that extra season, that punctuation to the end of the season that creates a whole lot of excitement and is what we're accustomed to. And the soccer sports fan in America has accepted that.
So the idea, Sam, I'll bring it to you, right? As someone who worked, by the way, Sam's boss was Vince McMahon. Just to sort of catch you up on Sam's vantage point here, he worked at the XFL in 2020.
Yep.
And your job was to create something from scratch with the acknowledgement in the context of what Evan and Brad just laid out, right? How do you make every single game matter? And I'm just curious, from the blank slate approach, what levers did you consider when designing a new sport, football in particular, to get to those areas?
Yeah, we had three main levers of incentivizing the output that we would want. So the first was compensation. We paid players more a pool of money if they won the game. So first, compensation, pay to play, pay more to win. The next was the micro changes of the game. So different ways to get teams influenced to score more touchdowns, to go for more risky plays, to see the actions that fans wanted. We changed the micro parts of the rules and the macro rules. So our first tiebreaker was net touchdowns, not in total points or not net points. It was net touchdowns because we wanted teams to force to go for more touchdowns. So there was different rules, levers that we could pull, as well as on the compensation side to incentivize our players.
I mean, the NFL as a product to emulate or compete with is kind of the through line of this panel, quietly too. Like, we're talking about how to save the regular season across sports, and the one sport that really doesn't have any anxiety, they're actually trying to expand and have expanded the regular season, is the NFL. And so, Evan, I mean, part of this is constrained, right? Like, by just the number of games played, that is self-evident. So how do you innovate with that as the constraint? How much does that shape how you think about all of this?
I don't think of the number of games as a constraint. I think one thing that Sam hit on that's really important is competitive meaning isn't just defined by the competitive outcome of the game. That through the rule set, through the incentive scheme, you can derive competitive meaning through those things. And so that's been a focus of ours, in addition to how we optimize our schedule and think about innovative competition formats and things. So our play-in tournament, which creates more tiers in the standings and increases the competitiveness of every regular season game. Innovating with things like score target and all-star game. Trying to find ways to make the actual game of basketball a more engaging one that in turn excites players, which is ultimately what we all want to see.
So you excited one player when the play-in tournament was announced. One of the most competitive people on this planet. And LeBron James said this, quote, about the play-in tournament. Whoever came up with that needs to be fired.
That was fun.
So congrats on not being fired.
Yeah.
Number one.
Survived.
What did you learn about that experience? Because there are constraints here that also have to do with what people are ready for, because sports can be a church, and graffitiing on the walls can feel like what you are doing sometimes.
I learned not to piss off LeBron. I think we said going into last year, whatever team in each conference ended up 7th and 8th was going to feel unhappy, because in the old system, they're in the playoffs, and now they got to go play the tournament. So that's where the Lakers happened to end up.
The 7th seed.
The 7th seed last year. Not a surprise that we heard from him. They clearly made the playoffs anyway. But I think after the fact, the feedback was resoundingly positive, because I think everyone saw what the notion of tiers or lines in the standings can do for competition. I've not gotten my thank you card from LeBron yet this year as they pursue the 9th seed, which will give them an opportunity to get in the playoffs. we'll see.
So fan feedback, I'm curious what ideas you guys get most often that you hate to get. Because it's just like, stop asking if we can get X, Y, or Z implemented. Evan, is there a hierarchy in your brain of just like, okay?
Shorter season, no conferences, 4-point line.
So let's walk through those, because I feel like there are panels titled shorter season, 4-point line, no conferences, right? Like, that seems to be a trope here.
Yeah.
So tell us, disabuse us of our delusions.
Well, so I think it's very easy to generate ideas. And like Sam and Brad, we're incredibly grateful that we have an energized fan base who wants to share ideas. We have media members, we have fans, teams, players constantly suggesting ways to improve the product. That's great. That's the first step. That's the tip of the funnel. The rest of the process is to evaluate, and this is our job, evaluate what that would mean for our game, right? How would it impact competition? How would it impact player health? How would it impact integrity? How would it impact the business? Because at the end of the day, we're a business. And so shorter season's an easy one. We would make less money with a lot fewer games. Unclear what the impact on player health would be. I think, you know, there's a sort of conflicting research about whether it's the number of games or game density or rest days or those things. So you have to evaluate that in context. Do I think that competition would be better with fewer games? Probably, but maybe not at the expense of the business.
So when Daryl Morey, nerd Elvis, dork Elvis, sorry to get the term from Bill Simmons correct, when dork Elvis says 58 game regular season in the NBA, your physiological response, Evan, is what to that?
I agree. Help me figure out how to make up the 40% of the revenue that we would lose by doing it.
Yeah. So this is to you just an obvious non-starter.
It's not a non-starter.
Stop trying to innovate around that idea.
No, not at all. So for example, we've obviously talked a lot about an in-season tournament, right? And maybe an in-season tournament is something that would replace some subset of games. So what if we played a shorter season, but now there was also an in-season tournament? Also gets at that something to win, new temp poles in the calendar, helps make up the economics. So it's not, you know, I've always said, you're not taking games out for the sake of taking games out. You're taking games out to see what else you can do to improve the product.
So I want to return to the no conferences and the four-point line thing in a second here, but I want to get Brad and Sam, just the constraints of like, hey, this is a multi-billion dollar enterprise. Like, let's actually have a realpolitik approach to like how realistic these things are. How much, for people who don't fully understand that, how much is money a constraint on the pie in the sky stuff that you guys would like to see, but clearly find barriers in front of you for?
Yeah, so it's the first, in our business, we call it execution viability. That's the first version of it. So the rule that I hated getting was put a chip in the ball to measure first downs, right? And so there's so many logistical issues that come with that, and that makes it a worse version also than how many times we actually need to use the chains is less than one time per game. So that's difficult, but...
Wait, so you're pro-chains?
I'm pro-chains, coach. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the chains are fine.
Well, explain the chain defense, because it does seem dissonant.
So here's what we did. So I'll go, here's how I was able to figure it out. How many times do you use the chains? That's not that many times per game. So from what we ask is it big enough to matter? It's not actually that big enough to matter. So we then go down this process. What if we were gonna steal from the MLS, put both teams on the same sideline, put a ribbon board on the opposite side of the field that would then track where the ball was, right? So you could see, so we replace the chains. Someone comes up to me, I talked to a coach or a official in the AAC, he goes, why don't you move the ball up to the nearest yard line after every first down? So you never actually are measuring.
How dare you?
Yeah, so we snuck maybe 12 yards into our game because we started every new set of downs on a yard line. So it was very easy to track. So sometimes the simple solution, right, is and doesn't cost me any money, and fans don't necessarily see it, is much easier than spending $1 million per game to put ribbon boards on the sideline. We had, I think, 3 measurements in 20 games. We pretty much had our solve of don't use the chains, pretty much, and they're pretty standard across the board of getting 10 yards. It's pretty good at getting 10 yards.
I like the idea of the chains as a job creator also. It's like, guys, come on, we need humans to move the chains. Humans, we're jeopardized people at this point, at this conference.
Hiring game day assistants, I don't know if you guys have had to do that at your jobs, but that might be the most difficult job of putting a game on, so I don't know about that.
Been there, yes. So Brad, for you, how does your brain process what these guys are saying in terms of the goals, the dreams versus the practical reality?
Sure, well, as you may know, the rules of the game are strictly governed by FIFA, so it's a very traditional sport, been around forever. Monkeying with the rules of the game between the white lines it's very difficult based on those FIFA guidelines. People always say, we need more goals. Make it more exciting, more fun to watch, more goals. Make the goals bigger. That would be great. I don't think there are a lot of people who would argue with that, but again, we're governed by the rules of the game. We can't make that change. Maybe we would try it in a lower league just to see if it has an impact on the game. And offsides, people would love to see the offside rule changed or have it be more advantageous to the attacking player, because that would promote more goal scoring. So those are the types of things we would like to try to talk about. But again, we're a little bit handcuffed.
But you're saying that in theory, you would like to see a bigger goal.
Not necessarily for Major League Soccer. I think we would like to see it a trial to see if it does make a difference. As far as Major League Soccer, the thing that has helped propel Major League Soccer and the expansion, the growth that we've been on is because we're an authentic soccer league. We're not gimmicky. In the early years, some of you may recall, we had a shootout at the end of the game if it was tied. It was one-on-one with the goalie from midfield. It was kind of cool. It was exciting. It was different, but it was very non-traditional, and the traditionalists scoffed at it. So as we have evolved, we've made sure that we've stayed within the confines of traditional, authentic soccer. So we wouldn't try something like that at the Major League Soccer level, but we would be interested at other levels if it does change the game.
So, Evan, to bring it back to your 95 theses, the four-point line, not exactly traditional basketball, to use Brad's terminology.
Yeah.
Where does your resistance to it as a concept come from?
I think the four-point line question is always, for me, one about what you're actually trying to accomplish with that, right? I think shortened season, we all know what we're trying to accomplish. Less player resting, more excitement game to game, more on the line. I'm not clear what everyone is always pointing to with a four-point line as to how it would make the game better. Meaning, we have those that lament for the loss of post-play. That's not going to help that, right? We have those saying there's too many three-pointers being shot. That's not going to help that. In fact, it'll drive shooting further from the basket. We have those saying that skill development in basketball at youth levels has dwindled because everyone just you know, no one has individual skill. Sorry, no one has team skills. It's all just individual skills, dribbling, shooting, dunking. Four-point line's not going to help that either. So I think getting at the core of what you're trying to do with that, what kind of offensive actions do you want to see? What defensive actions do you want to see? What types of shot profiles, shot charts do you want to see? That's the question. And one new initiative for us this year is we actually have fans in labs watching games with heart rate monitors and galvanic skin monitors where we can track biometric response to what's happening on the court. Because we want to be able to answer with data what about our game does drive fan interest. You can survey and say, do you like three-pointers? The answer is yeah. Do you like dunks? Yeah. Do you like fast breaks? Yeah. But what actually happens, you know, play to play, set to set, defense to defense, that drives that fan excitement? Because that can then inform what changes you might want to make to the game, including whether a four-point lie would make sense. But right now, I'm just not convinced that the upside is there to add what, obviously, by some is perceived as a gimmick.
Yeah, Evan, we had different budgets because you're using the heartbeat monitors. We tracked how much beer was sold at our games, and we sold out every game. So
get to the same place.
Yeah, that
was Vince wasn't in favor of opening the purse for the lie detectors for fans.
Yeah, we were going to start with the beer, and then we'll go to the lie detectors.
But let's go to the lie detectors, Evan, because what are you learning so far? How can you characterize your findings? Because that is a fascinating, like, I don't know if you can get closer to accurate readings of emotion than the admittedly kind of clockwork orangian description you just
gave. They volunteered. It was not forced. So ask me in 6 months on that piece. But we did the same for, you know, we talked about in-season tournament. We did the same thing there. I'm very envious of a lot of other, you know, digital products out there, content companies that can do prototyping, A-B testing of their content to see what resonates with fans. It's hard to do that. You can't just change a bunch of stuff in the NBA and like see what happens, right? So with an in-season tournament, we worked with a studio essentially to create 12 of these mini movie trailers where we could tweak in each one of these trailers the format and features of an in-season tournament. Again, put fans in that same lab.
In a world.
Yeah, exactly. It was literally that. Very exciting. So you could see number of teams in the tournament, when it takes place in the season, what the format is, what the incentives are, and that we were able to get great insight out of, and probably not surprising but helpful to know. Fans really love single elimination tournaments. They're a little bit confused by group play or pool play in the U.S. Fans want, if we were to do a tournament, relatively early in the year so that it doesn't detract from All-Star and the race to the playoffs. There has to be an incentive for players and teams. So those types of insights from biometric data was really informative as we shape a potential in-season tournament.
Sam, like, you played at Stanford, roommates with Andrew Luck. You are somebody who understands as well how the sport that sits astride our country, how it functions. What do you see in the NFL where you're like, oh, we have an idea that would make that better? What comes to mind when you think about that?
Probably our version of the kickoff. The NFL has about 40% of their kickoffs are returned, and it's still a dangerous play, versus we had 93% of our kickoffs returned, and we had zero injuries. Now, do I think it'd be zero injuries across the board for a full season? Likely not, but it would be the same injury rate as maybe a scrimmage play. So we've made that part of the game safer, which a kickoff is three times more dangerous than a scrimmage play. So I think adding that feature in, you bring excitement back into the game, as well as making the game safer for players. I think we're seeing players retire earlier and earlier. Like Andrew, he's retired early. But I think that there's opportunity to make the game safer, prolong having the star players in the league, excitement in the league. And I think that can help make people more excited to come to games.
But just on the injury rate, quick follow-up, how did you do that, such that the injuries were not actually a problem in the way that I would imagine?
Yeah, so we focused on what was actually causing the problem and tried to eliminate that versus trying to eliminate the play. Touchback eliminated the play more often than not, so that's why you have fewer injuries than they had previously before when they moved the ball up. So we looked at why people got hurt on kickoffs, and it was because we started 10 yards apart, sprinted 35 yards, and then made a collision. There's no other play in football where you're sprinting like you're moving that fast to create a collision. So we started the play where the ball was caught. So we looked at film of what does the play look like when the ball's caught, and more often than not, the coverage team was 5 yards apart from the return team, between 35 and 30, and they're facing each other. So we just started the play there.
Well, let's get back to what pisses Evan off. So the no conferences thing, Evan.
Yeah.
That was your third take that you hate.
So that one's easy. I think for years, our talking point is always, well, how would you deal with the travel, right? If we go 1-16, you're going to have Portland playing Miami in the first round and cross-country travel, player health, all those things. Like, sure, that matters, but in my head, you can solve for that, right? We could go back to a 2-3-2 model. We could spread out the playoffs. There's things you could do. The real issue is, again, this balance of what are you gaining, right? And the idea is you're gaining the best 16 teams in the playoffs. Well, it turns out that over the past 25 years, on average, one of our top 16 teams has missed the playoffs, right? And it's usually in favor of the 17th best team, right? Because in one conference, it's the eighth seed is slightly worse than the ninth seed in the other conference. So that's not super compelling, I think, from a fan perspective. And then the notion of having the best two teams play in the finals. Well, A, the records aren't always reflective of who the best two teams are. They're certainly not reflective of who the sort of perceived most exciting teams are, that the teams that fans want to see. And there's no guarantee that those two teams are going to make the finals. And so those are the upsides. And the downside, which is the piece we're talking about, is the regular season competitive meaning. Because I think one thing we've proven with the play-in tournament is that the best way to drive competition is to have more races and more lines. And the more you bundle teams together and reduce the number of those playoff races, the less exciting your regular season is. And so when you look at what happened in last year with the East and West races, what's happening now this year, race for 6, race for 7, race for 8, race for 9, race for 10, you lose that if you go to a no-conference model. And so I think it all comes down to that trade-off. I happen to think that the balance is heavily in favor of doing it in a way that maximizes regular season, but you know, there are those who think that we'd be better off with a no-conference model.
Okay, so a quick break here from our panel, and we'll be back in a second with Brad and Evan and Sam.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Well, speaking of how to create these structures and incentives in the flow of the regular season, the mid-season tournament concept, where are we on that as you see it? How angry do you expect people to be, like LeBron, when or if that gets implemented?
Yeah, so hopefully they're not angry. I mean, all of our research shows that, you know, despite some loud detractors, fans really love this concept. And more importantly, our players love this concept. I've talked a lot about the fan piece of this. We are incredibly closely partnered with our players and our teams. Our players have three players who sit on our competition committee where we debate these things. But players want to win. They're inherently competitive. And so giving them more things to win, again, same point, 29 of our 30 teams go home without a title every year. So that's the majority of our 510 players now. What if there was something else to win that they felt compelled to win? And I think what we've proven with some of our more recent changes is it doesn't just have to be about the Larry O'Brien. We're not trying to detract from that. That will always be the primary goal. But can you add a so-called 1B to that 1A of the Larry? We think the answer is yes. We think it's worth trying. And in terms of where we are, it's you know, working through that process of aligning our players, our teams, our network partners on what the structure would look like. I think it's safe to say, you know, as we sit here in March, we're not going to have an in-season tournament next year, but hopefully not too far in the future. It's something that we'll pilot.
When it comes to the carrot at the end of the midseason stick, right, like why would players be so invested? Because proposing a 1B, amazing. That's kind of the subtext of this panel. How do we develop a 1B? Why would players feel like a 1B matters?
Why do they feel like the Larry matters? I think there's this notion.
Because people like me yell about it on TV.
And so I'm
we make fun of Charles Barkley.
So I'm going to call you and make you yell about the end season. I think, like, this is all fiction, right? We like sports.
How
is,
dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Sports is just created, right? James Naismith invented a sport. Many years later, we incorporated a league. Many years after that, we added a three-point line. Like, it changes. And so the Larry O'Brien is meaningful to players, teams, and fans because it grew to be meaningful. The All-Star game had been meaningful, got a little less meaningful. We put in a score target, we honor Kobe. It became meaningful again. So I think that's our view, is maybe not in the first year and maybe not for more of our veteran players, but a young player coming up who's yet to win a championship is going to see this as a legacy-building opportunity, a prestigious event. And then that filters down to the 10-year-old kid who's a future elite prospect saying, oh, great, like Donovan Mitchell's earned 4 in-season tournament cups. Like, I want to chase that. And now you've got guys coming up learning to value something that currently doesn't exist.
I'll build on that with the in-season tournament. So Major League Soccer and Liga MX, the Mexican League, we're partners in a number of different ways. But in 2023 and beyond, we're actually going to have a mid-season tournament where we're, both of us are going to take a month off during a season. Their league will halt for a month. Our league will halt for a month. We'll play a World Cup-style tournament with all of their teams, all of our teams. And the idea there is to create a new tournament, something, a new package, a new platform, something new and exciting within our league, a competition within the competition that both leagues are incentivized to perform well. And it will tap into a new audience base, help grow the sport in our region, a battle for supremacy, building off of that USA-Mexico rivalry that's developed on the national scale, World Cup qualifying and the like. So it's a twist on what the NBA has done or is thinking about doing, but it's with another league. And the goal of Major League Soccer is to continue to show the world that we are an emerging league. We're as strong, if not better, than the Mexican League, which is a very well-established league, been around for decades. We think it's going to be very meaningful and turn into something special over the years.
Yeah, so I don't get to use the word fiction because of Vince McMahon. So, you know, I had to pitch sports books that we weren't going to have someone get hit with a chair in the middle of our game. So
that's right.
But I think a moment that
the bruises are real.
Yeah,
they're right. Always real.
They're always real. But something that Evan pointed out about why does this matter is we looked at things like called champagne moments, or in our case, it was Bud Light Seltzer moments, to where how do we get our players to celebrate? How do we get that joy? And then the players get after it. So we put Bud Light Seltzer in the locker rooms after games.
This panel, by the way, not at all sponsored by Bud Light Seltzer. My personal seltzer sponsorship is very much open. Yeah.
Likewise. But it was a way for us to get those big moments, right? And so the winning team got Bud Light Seltzer. How they drank it was up to them, but Taylor Heineke famously shotgunned the beers like Stone Cold Steve Austin, and that was a moment that went viral that created this. An in-season tournament is another opportunity to create a moment, to create excitement that then fans and teams can now replicate over and over.
Related question for you, Evan. Is J.R. Smith on this committee that you mentioned? Because he feels like that would be something you'd have insight
on. No, he's busy tearing up NCAA golf.
That's right. That's right. He's one of our nation's finest participants in higher education right now.
Finest student athlete.
In many senses.
Yes.
So listen, the idea, Evan, that rivalries, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Brad, you mentioned this. It's a thing that seems to matter less and less to young people. I think of speaking and feeling very old and understanding how basketball fans who are young consume the game, which is far more individualistically, and that seems to be a consequence of a thing that I think we all felt good about for a very long time, which was these stars. Mm-hmm. The NBA is better than any other sport, arguably, at generating these faces and these names. And I wonder, how do you build traditional, maybe that's an oxymoron, how do you build a tradition, in fact, specifically in the context of a rivalry?
Yeah, I mean, probably grew up sort of in the similar time frame with you, and you think of all the basketball rivalries of the 90s. One of the reasons that is not as much part of our game is we have so much more player movement now, and that's been intentional because we wanted all 30 teams, the players, teams, and the fans in those markets, to feel like they had a chance to compete and not have the same teams winning championships every year. And in fact, I think we've had, you know, 8 different champions in our last 11 seasons. And when you have that player movement and you have those different teams competing, you don't end up with the same 2 teams playing in the playoffs every year, which is what drove a lot of those rivalries. And so I actually see that as a net positive, even though we may sort of miss that rivalry aspect. But I think it all comes, everything comes back to the players, right? If the players are bought into something, if they're out there competing, if they feel meaning, that energy and that drive exists. Now, maybe our players are a little more collegial with each other today than they were in the past, and so you know, friends off the court.
I can see why LeBron doesn't like you, Evan.
but I think that's a good thing. Like we want to engage people not just with the game on the court, but like Ja Morant is now a sensation for both his basketball persona as well as his social media persona. And so like those things are good for us in aggregate, even if we've lost, you know, that player to player, team to team rivalry. But it's not gone, right? I mean, you watch any game today, it's just as physical as it ever was.
Yeah, and I guess I want to pivot the conversation here now to, what is sort of the weirdest idea that you love, that in a dream world you love in your mind, if not in reality? Sam, if you want to go first as the guy who
sounds
is,
like he wants to. He's got
you're sort of like holding the figurative bong as the XFL guy. So,
I heard an idea recently about drafting, having a show to draft who your playoff opponent would be. So I think that would have been awesome, especially for us, as an opportunity to create a new opportunity that generates a rivalry. Like as you pick a team, then that's the reason why you now have a new rivalry. It's like, oh, you doubted us. You manufactured bulletin board material. And that, to me, would have been really exciting.
So for the podcast audience listening on Monday, I am getting that bong passed to me now. And I am also, I love this. I love that idea. I mean, Evan, the idea of, hey, we need entertainment, we need TV shows. Why are we seeding things? Why can't we let the best team get the first draft pick to then determine their opponent? Why can't we see that?
We could. That's actually been proposed by some of our teams. It's not unanimously supported by all of our teams. And that's probably why we haven't done it. But it's an idea that floats out there.
So what's the hesitance from the opposition to that concept?
So you hear things like, you know, bulletin board material and whether you're actually hurting yourself by picking an opponent. Would you just go by the standings anyway? How does that work logistically in the context of now a play-in tournament where the 8 seed isn't even determined until Friday night after the regular season ends? The playoffs are scheduled to start the next day. How would you actually set up the playoffs? How much break would you have? So there's, you know, some logistical elements there. We talk about how that plays out throughout the standings then. So like, sure, that's great for the number one seed, number two. It actually ends up really disadvantaging the fourth seed, who essentially is gonna end up getting the best of the 5 through 8, even if that's not 5. And so a team might actually prefer to be 5 versus 4 to see who picks them. So you wanna think about how it would incentivize competition throughout the standings. But that's one where there's pros and cons, and it would be more how the teams and players feel about it.
Yeah, I don't care about any of those criticisms, to be honest. I just love this idea now.
As a fan, the show would be great.
Brad, is that a thing that has crossed your transom, the draft your opponent concept to create bad blood?
We've kicked that around as well. We might actually try it in our next pro league. So that's on the table for the playoffs for our next pro league. If not this year, in future years. We think that there's challenges with it, but there's also some cool storylines that could develop.
Just remember this panel as the moment when that got legalized, for the record. I love that there is support for this. Okay, other ideas that are too weird, although that one felt way more reasonable, Sam, than weird in the end. Anything that you personally, Evan or Brad, just love that you know it's like, no, but this is a thing that I appreciate personally.
So on the soccer side, games ending in ties, I think it bugs some people. I've grown accustomed to it over the years, and you can see an amazing soccer game that ends in a 2-2 draw.
I mean, Brad, it's not great when ties are referred to as like incest, right?
Yes, yeah, like kissing your sister.
Not right. Not the best branding for the tie.
So I would like to see, maybe at some point, and maybe we try this in one of our leagues, a different way to break that tie. So if the game ends in regulation, you know, traditionally you play 30 minutes of overtime, and then after that you go to a penalty kick shootout, which is kind of a crapshoot. I think it could be cool, or something to consider is when you go to overtime, every minute, 2 minutes, you take a player off. You take a player off and you go until somebody scores. Even if you're down to goalie against goalie. I mean, that's a little absurd, but.
Oh no.
Yeah,
Pass that, Brad. Pass it over here. I love that. Yeah.
But, you know, we've monkeyed with me personally, some of those, and we've kicked it around. I don't think we would change something like that because the sport is so traditional. We're governed by certain rules, but ties, and I'd like to see something different.
I can tell you the worst idea I had. It was to take what the spread was from a sports book and start the game with that spread.
Dude, do you ever wonder if sports was also gambling at the same time?
Yeah, so that didn't go very far at all. But yeah, if we're doing the bong rip, then that was definitely a bong rip.
I love it. Evan?
We operate in a more grounded reality.
I've noticed.
I'm kind of envious of this. That sounds fun. I would say that there's a lot of like small ideas that I think could be impactful. I'm on a lifelong crusade against the free throw, which I think detracts from the fan experience, and so we've tested.
Wow, we got a clap.
Yeah, look
hold
at
on.
That.
Hold on. This movement has supporters.
Yeah, so we've in our G League now, we shoot one free throw worth 2 or 3 points depending on what the foul situation is. Interestingly, that's why we have the G League. We learned it didn't save as much time as we thought it would, meaning an average trip to the free throw line takes about 45 or 50 seconds. So you're not expecting to cut that in half because most of that time, more of that time is getting to the line, lining up. But we thought we'd, shave at least a third of it. We didn't, and part of that is because coaches now had to substitute before that first free throw as opposed to between them, so that took some time. Players actually were a little slower in that process because they do want to catch their breath in that break. So that was a good learning that maybe it wouldn't be as impactful to the flow as we thought it would be. I said a couple of years ago on a panel here about dividing the season into separate chunks where there's playoff spots at the end of each quarter of the season, if you will. So you get these sort of spikes where competition increases for some short period of time with the playoff spot on the line. Teams are never out of it because no matter how bad your first three quarters are, you can always perform well in the fourth and earn a spot. So things like that, but nothing in the realm of what we heard over there.
I love the idea that we're just on this couch, just like shooting ideas at the wall. And if you're on your couch and watching the NFL, you are getting mad about something related to the overtime rules. And I'm curious how you guys have seen that debate. This is a question from the audience. Do you have strong opinions, Sam? We can start with you as the football guy. If you could explain actually what the rules are as they stand today versus what your opinion of them might be.
Yeah, so right now it's a 10-minute quarter reduced from a 15-minute quarter added to the game. If a team scores a touchdown on the first possession, the game is over. If a team scores a field goal, the next team has a rebuttal. The problem that they see is that the idea that only one quarterback got to see the field. Overall, it's statistically a pretty fair game because they do a coin toss. We didn't have a coin toss in our league. They do a coin toss, and it's about a 52% chance to win if you get the ball first, so that's pretty darn close to a coin toss. But the playoffs have seemed to see a little bit of issues. The problem with fixing rules changes in our sport versus these sports is health and safety. So why did you reduce it from 15 minutes to 10 minutes knowing you're going to get more ties, which fans don't like? Well, you need make the game safer. The game is all scheduled around this 60-minute game. NFL is around 157 plays per game. Each play is an opportunity to get hurt. That's why you want to limit plays. What we did at the XFL was we turned it into a shootout. We stole from soccer, and we had 5 plays from where our 2-point conversion was at the 5-yard line. And it was, we do 5 rounds, win by 3. And so you're only adding 1 play at a time if you have a tie after the 5 rounds. So pretty much the maximum we were going to see was 10 total plays added for one side of the ball. You remove the drive, which is such a big part of the football game, but that was a sacrifice we were willing to make.
We talk about our overtime. Score targets have been very successful in the All-Star game. Maybe we should have overtime score targets instead of a clock. So that might be something that we test in the G League fairly soon. So it's more about trying to get ahead of the corollary ideas in our sport from looking at others.
Can I run a really nerdy experiment right now, just in terms of like straw polling, like Iowa caucus style? Can you please clap if you love score targets? It's like, what, a half and half, would you say? 50-50?
That's not very scientific.
You expect data at this conference? But I say that because it worked so much better than I think a lot of skeptics would have imagined. The score target, quote unquote, Elam ending, but score target, the generic off-brand version, as it were. What was your sense of that experience watching how well it went with your man LeBron James hitting the game winner, as it were?
Well, so it's, we've now had 6 games that we've had that have ended with score targets. So it's been fun to see. It's been fun to see the reaction. Obviously, there's always some, as we said, there's some criticism, some controversy. Oh, the game can't end on a free throw, or what do you do in a blowout? And so, it's not the kind of thing where we'd say we've seen enough that we should play 1,230 regular season games with score targets, but clearly has legs, clearly has some applicability. So what are those things? Maybe an in-season tournament, we talk about how do you differentiate it from a traditional season. Maybe that's a place to try a score target. As I said, overtime. So there's different steps you could take to continue to explore that, but I'm not ready to conclude a whole lot based on 6 games.
But you're saying that score targeting, infiltrating the regular season proper, the actual non-exhibition sport of basketball, you can see that happening?
Certainly not in the near future, but anything's possible, yeah.
Before I let you guys go, there is one more question that I just want to ask you from the audience. And this is sort of, this is a philosophical question. You know, they took the title of this panel quite literally, maximizing competitive meaning. What happens when competitiveness and competition is too much? Is that a concern? Like the idea of the toxicity of competition, that it overtakes personalities, that it is all that we care about. The fact that your faces are varying degrees of just like confused by this, yeah, like no, this is clearly not a thing that, this is the opposite concern that you guys currently have.
It, yeah, it's not the championships, it's the friends we made along the way.
Wow.
I don't think I can live by that. It's that I should win and my opponent should lose. Yeah, I have never thought about that. Now I'm gonna have to go to therapy.
Yeah, I think we all should. And on that note, thank you to Brad and to Sam and to Evan. Thank you, and apologies if I got you fired because of this.
Okay.
But I am Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Pablo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so that was us at Boston at Sloan. I'm Pablo Torre. Yes, this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.